I had thought the roles were going to be reversed. That Banty would speak much more about his reminiscences, and I would give a little bit in the background. Some of you might have heard some of what I'm going to say tonight from my previous talk on Banty's teachers. So if you imagine, we're going to extract that part from the talk I gave, and take away, we'll have that minus, Banty's personal reminiscences, because you'll do that yourself. So it'll be a short little introduction to give you the context for Banty's reminiscences, and also to give you some idea of the tradition to which Dogen Kenshi Rinpoche belonged. So I'm going to start by reading his name. Dogen Kenshi Rinpoche's name translates as "Glorious, Excellent, Victory Banner of the Teaching of the Changeless Supreme Vehicle." It's beautiful, isn't it? Gyumi Techog Tenpai Gyaltsen Pelzangpo. At least that's only one of his names. One of the other ones which can be published is called "Lord of the Dance, Radiant Embodiment of the Sutras and Mantras." Padma Garwang Osel Dona Lingpa. I don't know if the pronunciation is correct, but it's perhaps near enough. Those are the two names that he was given during his life as a monk and as somebody who was the recipient of Vajrayana initiations. There were other names which he was given during his lifetime. And the one, of course, which everybody usually knew him by was Dilgo Kenshi Rinpoche or Dingo Kenshi Rinpoche. And the name Dilgo or Dingo comes from his family. He belonged to a very aristocratic, almost a minor royal family of eastern Tibet, and the family was called the Dingo family. So that seems to be where his name came from. And he was born in 1910. So dying this year, 1991, makes him, or made him, 81 years old when he died. So, you know, quite a venerable, ripe old age. And he seemed to be active right the way up until the end of his life. I mean, just to within a few days of him dying, he seemed to have been very active. And of course, being Dogen Kenshi Rinpoche, he wasn't just a Rinpoche, somebody who is regarded in great veneration. The name Rinpoche means something like the precious one, and is usually applied to somebody who's seen as embodying the spirit of a bodhisattva. But he was also regarded as being a tulku. And sometime in his youth, he was recognized as being the emanation or the rebirth of Jamyang Kenshi Wangpo. Jamyang Kenshi Wangpo is the first Jamyang Kenshi Rinpoche, not the second Jamyang Kenshi Rinpoche, which was Banty's own teacher back in the 1950s. Jamyang Kenshi Choki Lodro, as your teacher was called, was an incarnation of the first Jamyang Kenshi, Jamyang Kenshi the Great, as he was called. So I'll refer to him as Jamyang Kenshi the Great. So I'm going to say a little bit about Jamyang Kenshi the Great and the context in which he arises. And that'll give you some ideas to who Dogen Kenshi Rinpoche is, because he's seen as being a direct emanation or incarnation of Jamyang Kenshi the Great. As far as I understand, Jamyang Kenshi the Great wasn't recognized as a tulku when he was younger, at least not initially. He seemed to have been brought up as a Shakyapa monk, and sometime in his youth, I think in his teens, he and two other monks were in a class together, a class being led by one Rinpoche called Gyaltsag Rinpoche. And Gyaltsag apparently said to these three monks, "You, Jamyang, you come and sit here. You, Jamgong, you sit there, and you, Patro, you sit there." And apparently he said to them that Jamyang Kenshi, was Virochana, and that Jamgong, who became Jamgong Kongtrul, another great lama, was an emanation of this part just came to me. Another famous bodhisattva, and Patro, he recognised as being Vimalamitra, and apparently that was it. They were just recognised from then on as being emanations of those three great bodhisattvas and teachers. And later on, it seemed that Jamin Khyentse was also recognised as being primarily an incarnation of Manjushri. Now, these three young monks, they formed a great friendship. Jamin Khyentse had come from a royal family himself, or at least a very rich aristocratic family, and he was very well to do. He had, you know, quite sort of rich clothing. Jangan Khonchul was a monk from another monastery, in fact, even from another tradition, and he was very, very poor, and his clothing was just holding together. I mean, only just holding together, apparently. And Patro Rinpoche was middling, and he was a Nyingmapa monk. Jamin Khyentse himself was a Shakyamuni monk, and they're all studying together in a Shakyamuni monastery. Jangan Khonchul had gone to this monastery in order to take up a new position as a sort of a cleric, and he was going to sort of keep accounts and things like that. And Patro had come to the monastery to learn from this particular teacher. So the three of them found themselves in this class together, and they formed a friendship. And the friendship seemed to be, well, from all accounts, from what I can gather, a real spiritual friendship between the three of them. They had a definite aspiration towards, towards the ideal of Buddhahood, towards the Bodhisattva ideal. And they just compared their experiences, and they tried to help each other on the way. And in the midst of all this, apparently Jangan Khonchul was quite bitter, and speaking against the monastery, the Shakyamuni monastery, who insisted that he get reordained, because he'd been ordained as a Kagyupa monk, and having gone to the Shakyamuni monk, was asked to be reordained. And he thought, well, no, look, I've done it already. I've gone forth. I've gone for refuge, and that should be enough. That was his position. I mean, it would be quite interesting to look at that in the light of our own position within this order. But that was what he regarded. And the three of them apparently started speaking about how dreadful it was that Tibetan Buddhism, which really was just one Buddhism, had broken into so many streams, you know, four major ones and many minor ones. And they formed the idea to try and bring together the streams of all the practices within Tibetan Buddhism back together again. So after their primary education was complete, they set out in different directions, and they set out to gain initiations from all the major lamas and even minor lamas in Tibet, to bring together all the streams of Tibetan practice. Tibetan philosophy seemed to have maintained itself in one mainstream, but the practice had severed and divided into many, many substreams. And each of them had to travel quite a long way to bring together back all the teachings that had got separated. There's one story of Jamin Khyentse. Apparently he found a young shepherd who couldn't read and couldn't write, and he had a particular teaching that nobody else had. And Jamin Khyentse apparently wanted the initiation for it. So to do it properly, apparently he had to first teach him how to read and write. So after teaching him to read and write, then got him to go through the initiation. Satisfied with that, off he went, and subsequently met with his two other friends, Patrol and Jamgong, and exchanged that teaching. And of course all the other teachings were exchanged, until all three had exactly the same teachings. They brought them all together again. So that was what the three young lamas were up to. And those three were perhaps the three most famous lamas of the 19th century, certainly in eastern Tibet. And they formed what they called was the Rime tradition, or the Rime movement, which was has been translated as the non-sectarian movement. And I think of the three, perhaps Jamin Khyentse, the great, was the most famous of them all.